Welcome to the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee meeting of Denver City Council. Full coverage of this session of the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee begins now.
Good afternoon, and this is July 15th meeting of the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee. I'm getting a little teary-eyed. My name is Daryl Watson. I am the honored to serve all the residents of the fine District 9, and today is the last meeting of the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee as we're currently constructed. There will be changes for all of our committees going forward in the next several weeks, and you should be hearing much more information as to what committees are going to be within the City and County of Denver. And it has been my honor to serve as the chair for this committee and to listen to the opportunities we have for increasing land use and working collaboratively with each of you. We have three action items today. Two will be voted on as a bulk item and one separately. But before we go into our action items, why don't we go around the room for the last time? We'll start with Councilmember Torres for introductions.
Good afternoon. Jamie Torres, West Denver District 3.
Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10. And Anshul told me that he was skipping Ludi because otherwise I would have called him out. So,
well, you did.
This is his last week, and I'm so sorry to see him leave.
Lucky District 7.
Good afternoon, Paul Cashman, South Denver, District 6.
Good afternoon, Amanda Sandoval, Northwest Denver, District 1.
Thank you so much, everyone. We have a map amendment rezoned. Fritz Clausen, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Council Member, and all Council Members here. Also an honor to be presenting here one last time on 3025 West 3rd Avenue, going from ESUDX to ERX3. We'll go through the request, location, context, process, review criteria, and staff's recommendation. The request is for rezoning at 3025 West 3rd Avenue, right at 3rd and Federal, from the current ESUDX to an ERX3 zone district. The property is 6,250 square feet, currently contains a single-family residence. Applicant's stated intent is to provide for additional attainable housing units and one income-restricted unit on the property. Location, we're here in Council District 3, represented by Councilmember Jamie Torres, and in the Barnum Statistical Neighborhood. Again, the current zoning is ESUDX. It's right up against the EMX3 district along Federal, and right also up against the OSA at Barnum Park. Current land use, single unit residential. It's on a street that is mainly single unit residential, across the street from one to two unit residential and backing up to commercial retail and industrial along Federal Boulevard. Picture on the left is the current home on the property, seen from the corner of Grove and Third. Picture on the right is the two unit residence across the street, and a picture in the bottom right is the commercial zone property along Federal Boulevard, immediately adjacent. Applicant has reached an affordable housing agreement, an affordable housing plan agreed to with host, stipulating that 20% of the total dwelling units, which is anticipated to be one of five townhome units, will be for sale, income restricted at 110% of AMI, built on site with a minimum of three bedrooms, 99-year covenant. We have Leah from host here with any questions. Looking at the process, this had its informational notice on April 29th of this year, followed by planning board notice on June 2nd. Planning board hearing took place June 18th, was unanimously approved for recommendation. We're here at the final meeting of the Ludi Committee on July 15th, and anticipated date for public hearing is August 25th. This is in the area of the community coalition of Barnum and adjacent to the Valverde Neighborhood Association's covered area. We've not received any comments and letters, comment letters from RNOs, and we have not received any comments from members of the public. Okay, we'll go through our review criteria. That's consistency with adopted plans, public interest, and consistency with neighborhood context, zone district purpose, and intent. Looking at our consistency with adopted plans criteria, First, Comprehensive Plan 2040 calls for increasing development of housing units close to transit and mixed-use areas, promotes infill development where infrastructure and services are already in place, ensure neighborhoods offer a mix of housing types, and many other goals and strategies. More specifically, Blueprint Denver sees this area as an urban edge future neighborhood context and as a high medium residential future place type, which some details of that, buildings generally up to 5 stories in height, can be a mix of mid-scale multi-unit residential option with some neighborhood serving mixed use. West 3rd is a local, Grove Street's a local, but it is right off of Federal Boulevard, which is a mixed use arterial. It's not in the growth strategy area. The West Area Plan has some specific recommendations. Also, updated blueprint with the high medium residential. West Area Plan sees high medium residential as a combination of mid-scale multi-unit residential and a mix of neighborhood serving uses. The property is located within 1/8 mile of a future high capacity transit station that is the anticipated Federal Boulevard BRT stop at 2nd and Federal. With a up to 5-story height recommendation. Of course, we are familiar with the West Area Plan priorities regarding preservation of existing affordable housing and strategies to preserve existing affordable housing, especially as it relates to applicant-driven one-off rezonings. rezonings can be consistent with adopted plans if there are commitments to ensure affordability as part of new missing middle housing opportunities. Second, public interest. Given that there is a agreed to affordable housing plan with HOST and that this rezoning would enable redevelopment of the property to provide both market rate attainable housing and income restricted for sale housing, which we are told is very highly needed in this area, and at a size that is conducive to family housing at a minimum of 3 bedrooms, we see this as being in the public interest. Finally, consistency with neighborhood context, zone district purpose, and intent. The ERX3 zone district is intended to apply to residentially dominated areas served by local or collector streets where a building scale of 1 to 3 stories is desired. Residential mixed-use zone districts generally are intended to promote safe, active, pedestrian-scale diverse areas through the use of building forms that define and activate the public realm and ensure new development contributes positively to the established residential neighborhood character. Okay, staff's recommendation. Finding that the review criteria have been met, staff recommends that this committee, among its last actions, move this application forward for consideration by the full City Council. And happy to answer any questions you may have.
Rich, you're shockingly fast and accurate.
Thank you. I appreciate
the presentation. I would like to welcome Council President Pro Tem Romero Campbell, and we have Council Member Torres in the queue, so the queue is open for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Fritz. Quick question on the height and how does the envelope look being next to another SU property?
The height in the proposed, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's
can
under.
Can you go all 3 stories right directly next to?
Yes, it's within the height allowed next to a protected district.
Okay, and it's a full 3 stories that are allowed in
yes.
this proposed?
Yes.
Okay. The owner, or are you the owner of this property? Are they here?
Is the owner here?
Should be on Zoom.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
And what is the name, Fritz?
Jesse Donovan.
So, Tim, can you promote Jesse Donovan and let us know when they're in? And Jesse, when you sign in, once you accept the promotion, please introduce yourself. And Councilmember Torres will ask the question again. So it'll take a few seconds. If we have any additional questions, we can circle back as Jesse is signed in. Any other questions as we await Councilmember Torres?
You're there? I'm actually on. I don't know if anyone can hear me.
Perfect. We can hear you. Please introduce yourself, Jesse, and Councilmember Torres has a question for you.
Sure. My name is Jesse Donovan. I'm the owner of the property, and my address is 3253 North Gaylord Street in Denver.
And Jesse, we usually recommend for folks commenting to be on video. Do you have the ability to turn your camera on?
I do. I'm in the car, so.
Okay, don't. You're up here. Councilmember Torres, turn it over to you. There you go.
Okay. Hello. Hi, Jesse.
Hi.
Can you talk to me a little bit about how you did outreach on the project?
Sure. So I've attended two meetings with the Community Coalition of Barnum. One was prior, like right after I put in the formal rezone. It was last summer, and it was prior to the memo, the West Area Plan implementation memo. So I met with them and kind of talked high level. I was on the phone, so some people couldn't hear me very well. So I went back to Community Coalition of Barnum a few months ago, I want to say maybe 3 months ago. It's in the application, and chatted with them again. There weren't any significant, I would say the most significant comments and questions were regarding glazing and kind of with a large building being able to see into the neighbor's properties. There's some questions about access or setbacks from the property line. And then there was just in general some not specifically targeted questions or concerns, but more concerns just about density. And then some people, I guess I would put it that they cautioned me about the area, which is that just that there's a lot of unhoused traffic that goes kind of from Federal Boulevard to the park, and just kind of, I guess, warning me about potential issues with putting, you know, new townhomes in the area. In addition, we did the outreach. We dropped off flyers with all the neighbors within 200 feet. I think I went a little bit further than that, but dropped off information about the project. And the only response I had was from our direct neighbor to the north, who actually had her cell phone info already. She texted me and she wanted to know if I would be interested in purchasing her property as well. And I politely declined, but that's the only outreach I received from those letters.
Okay. Thank you, Jesse.
Sure.
Just really quickly, what you're planning to build are 5 units facing Third.
So it would be one building. It would be 4 garages accessed off of the alley. And then it would be a building. One building has 5 units. 3 would be facing south to Third, and 2 would be facing west to Grove toward the park. And I can answer, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I have a little bit more insight on the height question you asked earlier, if you want me to expand on that.
Yeah, please do.
Sure. So there's a 25-foot setback for adjacent to the protected district, which would be to the north. So basically the north half of our site is restricted to 27 feet in height. So, and we've talked about this before, basically what you could do is you could do 2 stories for half of it, and then the front, the south side, could go up to a 3rd story. That's not our intent. It adds a lot of construction cost by having a deck, and also the stair core takes up most of the space to go up to a 3rd level. So what we've decided to do on this one and other projects that are basically the same design intent is to keep the entire thing at 2 stories above grade. So it'll be one basement and 2 stories above grade, and the peak of the roof will be below 27 feet. So that's 3 feet lower than what is allowed in a single family zone district. We also do this just because it just kind of takes that off the table of people saying, oh, this is a big hulking building. You know, the footprints may be a little bit bigger, but the height is lower. It doesn't feel like a massive apartment building right next to single family residential.
Okay. That's super helpful, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness around that. I think that's all I've got. Just so my colleagues know, we approved another project that you did or that you're doing in Villa Park, and you're doing something similar there, right, off of 8th and Grove?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I don't have any other questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks so much, Jesse.
Okay.
That's excellent. And don't drive. Anyone else in the queue?
Fritz, was there anything specific to the affordable housing piece that you wanted HOST to present on, or that HOST would like to communicate as far as their agreement? That was not a direct question, but really, if HOST has some information you would like to share, I think it's always helpful.
I'll leave that to HOST discretion.
Why don't we encourage the HOST team to come forward, share very briefly kind of what the process is. Thanks for introducing yourself.
Great. Good afternoon. I'm Laya Mitchell from the Department of Housing Stability. You know, this is a five-unit site, so typically a five-unit development would pay a linkage fee and not, you know, standard process, they would pay linkage fee and not have units on site required through expanding housing affordability. But because of the location in the West Area and our West Area implementation memo, we've been considering alternative options that bring affordable units on site. And so we've worked with Jesse and the team to identify a solution that would bring, that would allow the project to move forward while having an on-site unit income restricted. And so because it's a for sale unit, which are very valued and underproduced by the market, the affordable for sale units, and it's also a three bedroom unit, which are also in high demand, we have allowed them to go up in AMI compared to our standard compliance, which is at 110% of area median income. There's still a big gap between what the market provides and affordable home ownership opportunities, especially at that three bedroom size, which is why HOST has agreed to this commitment.
Thank you so much. One more time around the room, if I'm not seeing any questions, this is an action item and it requires a motion and a second. Do we have someone that make the motion? Moved by Torres, second by Hines. Do we need a vote or acclamation? Thank you so much, Fritz, for your presentation. We'll see you on the floor.
Thank you.
On the floor. While we're transitioning, we have another action item, 250992 and 250993. Geneva Houghton and team, if you don't mind coming forward, we'll give you a few moments to set up. This is also an action item, will be voted on as a bulk vote for both items, so there'll be just one presentation. And whenever you are ready, the floor is yours, Geneva.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, I'll kick us off.
Okay.
Geneva's the real expert, as I think you all are aware by now. But Elena McWhorter, the legislative liaison from Dottie, here with Geneva Houghton, who is our program director for the Sidewalk Enterprise Program. Very excited to come back and give you a comprehensive update here on where we stand and present to you two integrated construction contracts that are going to help us seamlessly and efficiently move this program forward and start to deliver sidewalk projects on the ground as voters intended and voted on a few years ago. You may recall we came with a professional services contract a few months ago. So we are going to also talk about how these construction contracts work together with those professional service contracts to help Geneva and our sidewalk team really deliver these large-scale projects citywide. So we'll spend some time talking about why integrated construction contracts? What are those? Why we chose that in our delivery of construction mechanisms? Timeline and next steps of how, with your hopeful and respectful approval of these two construction contracts, we'll be able to really start hitting the ground running and really start our implementation plan as well, which I know is on a lot of people's radar on how we start that community engagement process to really drive how these dollars are spent. So with that, I'll turn it over to Geneva, and we've also got our excellent sidewalk team here in the audience if there are questions.
Great, thank you, and nice to see you all. I will probably speak a little bit slower than Fritz, but I can try to go faster. All right, so as Elena mentioned, we're here to talk about two integrated construction contracts. I've briefed almost all of you on these over the last 6 weeks or so. It was really good conversations that informed the presentation today. Following and pending your approval, we hope that this will go to full council on 7/28 to help us move into construction as soon as we can. So what is integrated construction, which we nickname, of course, with an acronym IC. So if I say IC a bunch, that's what I'm referring to. This is a resource mechanism to allow us to flexibly deliver a large number of projects. It allows us to also act quickly and have that flexibility. It's providing assistance through design, pre-construction services, through the procurement of construction, and for the construction itself. The benefits of IC contracts are that these are advantageous for projects of similar scope or location. In this case, it is sidewalks, and we are delivering them across the city. So because of that more narrow scope, this lends itself well to the construction mechanism. It helps us reduce construction procurement timelines, which is really critical as we want to deliver as fast as we can and reduce some of that burden on going through a grand number of procurements. It also allows for constructability input as designs are being finalized. And that's a critical component for us. We have sidewalks designs underway, and we'll be undergoing many, many more with that HMTV contract. And so this mechanism will allow us to have those constructability reviews, cost estimating, scheduling, all of that input up front so that we can move into construction faster and more effectively. It also provides staff augmentation, which, knowing everything that's going on at the city right now, the more that we have that ability to procure and have the help in procuring construction is advantageous. And as it's important to all of us, this provides extensive opportunity for our minority in business and our minority firms to participate, which I'll get into later. The city has used IC contracts across several different ways. One was Rhino area improvements, where we had a number of projects in a really similar geographic area that were pulled together into one IC. They were used at Red Rocks, and they're used right now on a citywide accessibility contract as well. And we chose this based on an analysis done that compared integrated construction against other alternative deliveries and more traditional delivery mechanisms, including construction management general contractor, or CMGC, design build, or a hard bid. And this came out on the top. And just as with all procurement, we went through a fair and equitable process. This was a two-step RFP process. We put that out to our industry partners and have had 11 submittals. We took five of those firms to an interview process, which had an interview panel composed of DOTI, DOF, and OSEI. And from that, we are moving two contracts forward to award to two different firms. And so what is in that scope of services? It is the pre-construction services, like I mentioned, things like helping with constructability review. It is cost estimating. It is helping us support, giving support on right-of-way services. It is the procurement of construction, meaning that it gives us the opportunity for the IC contractors to solicit bids for work. And it's the construction of sidewalks themselves. So all of the mobilization and concrete and all of those things are included in this, one of the reasons why the contract values are quite high. It also includes construction management services. So once again, the management of the work to make sure that the work is being done to our standard. So the two teams that we've selected are SEMA Construction at $50 million in capacity and Melinder White at $25 million in capacity. For both, it is a three-year contract, and for both, it is a 22% MWBE goal, which is $16.5 million of that 75. Let me take a drink of water. Okay, so what are we going to be doing with this? We will be implementing the sidewalk program using these two contracts. This will cover new sidewalk construction, so the sidewalk gaps that you've heard mentioned where no sidewalks exist today and we get to establish a brand new one. It's also implementing sidewalk repairs and rebuilding sidewalks up to ADA standard, for which we know that there are more than 1,200 of that in the city that need fixing. Ultimately, we need construction contracts to help us to deliver the program, and this will help us get there. Our 2025 shovel-ready projects include some of the following: East 44th Avenue, Sheridan Boulevard, Tower Road, and West Evans. We anticipate contract notice to proceed in September and for sidewalk construction to begin later this year. And one of the questions that came up through our briefings was how and why we chose these two values. So 50 million and 25 equals 75 million. And the reason why we allocated 75 million of construction capacity goes because of how the sidewalk program will be collecting revenue over the next 3 years. Our budget for this year is just shy of 29 million. Our budget for next year will be 33.8 million. Over 3 years, this is a $97.5 million program. 15 million of that went through, that capacity was through HNTB on-call, which you all approved. And that was, and includes everything for a sidewalk implementation plan, design services, program management services. The remaining 77% of that $97.5 million is intended to go to construction. We know that that is the most important thing for the success of this program. And if we are not constructing, we are not meeting the will of the voters. So together, if you take the 15 and the 75, that puts us at 90 million. So that's how we got to these figures. Okay. One of the questions we also received is how will the HNTB team work with these IC teams? So here are a few examples. The first are the establishment of those sidewalk designs, so the engineering work. As those designs are being completed, we get to have constructability reviews from the teams that will be doing the construction. We also get to have a validation of those cost estimates. And then as the designs are completed, they move to construction by the IC teams. The sidewalk implementation plan will also be led by HNTB, and that will have input from the IC teams. Construction approach, feasibility, making sure that everything that we put in that plan is as realistic and truthful as possible, because it will be these firms that are helping us get there for the first few years of our program. Another example are the standards and templates for public outreach. This is so important for us to have consistency in our messaging, through design and construction. Those standards will be developed by HNTB and used in construction by SEMA and Melinda White. Okay, I just have a couple more slides. So this is a compressed schedule similar to what I showed you in our previous briefings. In blue are the program setup activities, all of those things that are happening behind the scenes to help us get this machine going so that we can be delivering in a thoughtful and effective manner. In purple are project-specific communications and other programmatic communications, council touchpoints, community touchpoints, making sure that we are continuing to be educating the public and engaging with them throughout. In orange is the sidewalk implementation plan development, which will kick off hopefully next month, really hoping next month, and then concluding by the end of next year. In yellow are the engineering activities that will be underway, led by HNTB. And then in green are those construction activities. I do want to explain that the 2025 spot repair work was done on a different contract because we knew it would take a while to get this IC up and running, and it was really important for us to have repair work underway. So in the future, that repair work will be completed through the IC contract. And so quick heads up on what's happening this summer. The sidewalk implementation kickoff will happen soon, and we will be in touch with more information. We have spot repair work underway in districts 1 and 10, more districts coming down the pike. And then, as always, we are keeping our website up to date with live FAQs. Every time we get a new question from the public, that helps inform what needs to be on the FAQs, and so that is where we're trying to keep as much information as possible. So, our council request for today is to approve these two contracts, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Geneva. Thank you, Elena. We have three folks in the queue, and let's start first with Councilmember Alvidres.
Great. Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you for that breakdown.
Yes.
I'm looking at the slide 8 where you have the HNTB team versus the IC team. Mm-hmm. And what I'm struggling with is if we don't have a sidewalk implementation plan, how are you having sidewalk construction before we have seen or reviewed that plan?
Yes, great question. There are sidewalk projects in the queue right now that are ready to go to construction. Those are gap projects that were started several years ago. And ideally, through this IC, we will have a construction mechanism that works for that because they fit within the sidewalk enterprise scope. So those projects are going to be some of the first out of the gate. There will be other projects that I hope that we can deliver that are one-off projects. A good example is there's a participatory budget project near Athmar Park. That is one that would go through the IC.
So we're going to take dollars that were allocated to the participatory budget program and not use them and use the funds that taxpayers are paying for this program to replace those.
So that those participatory budget funds will still be used on sidewalks, and then we will be using additional sidewalk enterprise funds to enhance the scope so that more is delivered on that project as an opportunity to one build, as you might say, of doing more as we're already in design and will be in construction at that location.
Okay.
So another way that these contracts will be helpful for us is, yes, the sidewalk implementation plan will absolutely be the guiding document to make sure that we are all moving in the same direction. But I also want to make sure that we have a pipeline of projects so that we are continuing to deliver even as some of those sidewalk implementation plan details are being worked out. So my ideal is that next year we have some projects that go into early construction and we have the opportunity to test field fit installation, which is something we haven't been able to do for sidewalks yet. And I want to be able to test that as we're finishing the implementation plan to say, this is how this is working, and this is why this might work in these instances and less well in these other instances. So as we're finalizing, I still want to be delivering, because otherwise we won't be proving to the public that we can be delivering the program.
Okay. Another question that has been brought by my constituents to me is just, will Treelawn be implemented anywhere, and how will, I don't see, is the tree funding within the construction funding? How is forestry involved in this? And is there going to be right-of-way acquisition for Treelawn?
Great questions. So,
and I didn't get a briefing on this, so I'd appreciate that in the future before it comes here.
Yes, absolutely. So for the Treelawn, based on city standards, there are streets, most of our streets are supposed to have Treelawns. One of those questions that we will need to work with the public to talk about trade-offs is what that looks like when we go to implement that. So ideally, we are implementing a Treelawn and sidewalk in all places where it's up to standard. If that means that we have to make right-of-way acquisition and that's incredibly expensive or incredibly impactful to our neighbors, that might be a decision where we opt collectively to say it is better for us as a city to have fewer impacts to our neighbors and maybe not have a Treelawn. Those are some of those trade-off discussions that we haven't yet answered and are going to work through the sidewalk implementation plan.
Okay.
Through forestry, we are working very closely with our city forester and his team and have a process by which in design, we go through a tree impact resolution. So anytime there might be a tree impacted, it is our city staff and our foresters that work together to say, this is how we can mitigate any impacts. And so that then is carried throughout design and into construction as well.
And what about I think if you look, and I was just looking at this 44th Street, for example, there's a lot of area with no trees. And so will we, as we go, not just pay attention to the trees that we would potentially remove, but how are we going to put trees into these areas that have very little to no tree canopy?
Yes. Yes. Those are incredibly important programmatic decisions, and how we approach them will be something that we need to determine as a program. Ideally, we are installing trees. We have limits in how that works from a maintenance perspective, from a funding perspective, and what the Sidewalk Enterprise Fund can cover. So those are challenges that we'll need to work through, knowing that we have two ideals and two goals that need to be upheld, which is increasing and protecting our canopy and delivering a whole sidewalk network. So I don't have a perfect answer for you yet, Councilwoman, but I know that that's really important, and those are those are some of the things that will be carried forward.
I guess what I struggle with is approving this to begin construction when we don't know how the trees will be implemented, when we don't have the answers to these questions, and we may not be informed when these decisions are made, or they could just be made without council. And so that part is concerning to me. When I look at this three-year contract capacity for $90 million, how much revenue are we anticipating to earn in those 3 years?
Yes, let me pull up that slide. Did I pass it?
It's seven.
I think so, yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. So the forecasted revenue over those 3 years is $108 million. We hold 10% of that as contingency that does not get budgeted. So the annual budget over those 3 years is $97.5 million.
Okay. That's helpful. And so are we borrowing these dollars ahead of time?
No, we are not. The two contracts are awarding the capacity to do the work. Just as with other contracts with the city, the work itself will not be moved forward into task orders or work orders unless there is budget available. So for instance, in 2025, if I look at this, we have $28.9 million. Not all of that goes to construction. I could not, for instance, write a work order for $30 million because I don't have that in the budget this year. But because the budget will be coming in and not all of this work will be delivered in year one, we will be able to match our revenue with the capacity that's available.
So one of the things I'm curious about is, of that $28.9 million, has that already been collected? Are we anticipating collecting it? Have people been paying that extra fee?
Yes. We are in active collections right now. Those started actually very late in 2024, December of 24, because of how the billing cycles work. So we are collecting revenue and we are on track to collect our full forecasted revenue for the year.
Okay, and then just on the goals portion, I noticed you had minority and women business enterprises. I didn't see a small business goal. Is that excluded, or why isn't there an SBE goal as well?
That's a good question. I'm actually going to tap on my colleague, Steve Coggins, to answer that question.
Thank you so much for introducing yourself.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, council members. My name is Steve Coggins, and I support Geneva on the sidewalk program. So on the question, the Meebee Weebee was the goal that we had set forth with the goals committee, so that's where the 22% came from. There was no goals or any discussions really about the SBE portion of this. So there was not a requirement for an SBE. We just focused on MWBE for this particular contract.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then my last question is, I know Sheridan is on here and I know half of Sheridan is in Lakewood. And so I want to make sure we're not replacing Lakewood sidewalks.
We are not replacing Lakewood sidewalks. Great question.
Okay. Yep. That's all. Thank you, committee chair.
And I will add very quickly, Geneva and team, I know City Forestry, for the first time, I think almost in 40 years, now has a strategic plan. And they describe throughout the city what the steps are that they should be taking for ensuring they're increasing tree canopy. That plan was developed in collaboration with Dottie, Kasser, Denver Parks and Rec, and a whole host of other organizations. It may be helpful for us to have that strategic plan available to answer questions on how we're dealing with streets, with scapes that do not have trees and how they're replacing and how that's tied in, not just to this plan for sidewalks, but also to the other plans that Denver Parks and Rec and Dottie has. So next in the queue, and thank you so much, Councilmember Alvitas, great questions. Councilmember Hines and then Council President Sandoval.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you, Sutton, for your advocacy. While I may not have voted for the HNTB project, I'm very interested in sidewalks. And when I announced my candidacy in 2018, I had one thing that I cared about, and I said, it's about the little things, our busted and broken sidewalks that we have in our city and in District 10. So this is, you know, something that is really important for mobility around the center city. More than a third of households in the west side of District 10 don't own cars at all. Capitol Uptown, 37% of households in City Park West don't own cars at all. So they rely on bike lanes, preferably protected bike lanes, and a broad and inviting pedestrian experience. So Councilmember Cashman, former Councilmember Clark and I served on a task force of sorts, and we met for a year and a half at least, if not 2 years, to talk about sidewalks. And so some of the questions that Councilmember Alvijas were asking, we bopped around a lot of those, and man, there's some really tough questions that we're gonna have to answer at some point as a city, where, you know, to your comment about maybe it's in the best interest of the city not to take, for a tree lawn, might also be in the best interest of the city for there to be some of that. And
absolutely.
I'm glad that you're having, you're planning to have some of those conversations. I do have a little bit of reservation, as Councilmember Alvijas had, about saying yes on moving forward with dollars when we don't know exactly what those decisions are. Which is very similar to the reservations I had with the HNTB contract. So, but I sure hope that we do move forward with a broad and inviting pedestrian experience. And so, one of the big advantages of having this program in its form is economies of scale. Instead of the participatory budgeting project B1 plot, we could do a whole block. The crew's already there on site. They've already done the design for that entire block, and so let's do the whole block. There's a whole lot of cost savings, but in addition to that, there's also a consistent pedestrian experience along the block. And I know District 10. I don't know the other districts as well as I know District 10, but I know there are a lot of spots, City Park West, where the sidewalks don't line up from plot to plot. You have to traverse over someone's grass to get to go to the next plot, and it's a different material. It's different spots. Some have tree lawns, some don't. Similar pedestrian experience, I think, really also makes a whole lot of sense, and I'm really excited about with the way that we're considering implementing here. Let's see. As far as some of those difficult decisions, as I mentioned, Councilmember Cashman and I, we talked about a lot of those with Nick Williams and others in Dottie. Some of those are going to be really tough conversations, and we wrapped up that task force at least a year and a half ago. So that we were thinking of them maybe even 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know if we made a lot of progress in those. I wonder if there have been ongoing conversations.
I think it is an ongoing conversation for everyone who touches sidewalks, and it comes up now on a project-by-project basis. Some of those competing priorities and conflict points of saying, we have all these things that we want to do, and we're also trying to build out a beautiful sidewalk network with tree lawns and have this amazing lush tree canopy, while also not impacting our residents who are saying, this is thing that matters so much to me. And so one of the things that's going to help us through the program is establishing better processes and helping with the sidewalk implementation plan, of having some of those consistent questions, that we have a way to work through those decisions so that we're not necessarily making them on a case-by-case basis, because we won't be able to scale the program at that. And then as we work through those in design, we're able to construct them based on the will of the public.
In the slide mentioned, and thank you for the briefing in advance, I don't know how I missed this bullet item, but you said there's a citywide accessibility project that's using IC. What is that project?
Yes, I can answer a bit on that, and then I'll tap on Steve if I get this incorrect. So my understanding is that is an integrated construction contract that is focused on bringing our curb ramps up to standard, and that is one of the ways that we are using the annual sidewalk, the lawsuit for ADA accessibility, that that is one of the implementation.
Agreement with the Department of Justice.
Thank you very much.
Not sure it was a lawsuit. I said
it was a lawsuit.
It is?
It was. It started as a lawsuit.
With the Department of Justice.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So yes. I know that I kept calling it a lawsuit and people kept correcting me. It was like an agreement. Well, how did it
started start? As yeah. A, yeah, so, and then it went to an agreement
anyway.
That we would fix it.
But that is what is one of the construction mechanisms used to bring our curb ramps up to standard.
Yeah, and I think that agreement ends this year. So I would ask committee chair if we could bring it to Ludi for a future conversation, but this is the last ever. So might be interesting to get an update on that conversation. The last thing, Councilmember Cashin and I talked about this, and Councilmember Clark in that task force, I mentioned it in the briefing about cross-grade.
Yes.
When we talk about making sure that the sidewalks that we create are ADA compliant, that includes cross-grade. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Hines. And we will still be discussing land use issues in committee to be announced going forward. So, Ludi ends today. Land use forever in the city county of Denver. We have three other council members in the queue, Council President Sandoval, Councilmember Torres, and then Council President Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you. Thank you for the work on this. I think there's still just lots of confusion out, at least in my council district, I can just speak for mine, about the sidewalk program. I think it comes on the heels of charging the same year that we're also charging for trash, and on the same year that it got recycling got taken away. And so there feels like everyone's getting charged and services aren't being rendered. And so with these new contracts, I think I asked during my briefing, are you planning on bringing someone in-house? So I mentioned, I think it was Steve, if you help, I might have to phone a friend. It was during a bond, maybe it was the 2008 bond. Someone from Jacobs got brought in-house so that there was more cross-collaboration. Have you all given that more thought?
We have. We have one of our members from SEMA here today. We're still working through the contracting itself. And so once we're underway, it is a topic of conversation that I want to bring up and provide as a suggested opportunity for our contractors, understanding that there are a lot of benefits to kind of co-locating and having some of that face-to-face. So absolutely love the idea. We are going to explore that feasibility, and I would very much like to see that happen.
So in terms of like, understand why you, on slide four, it's you chose the integrated construction for sidewalk enterprise program. Do you have something that, I guess it, I see how this benefits, like, so let me see how I can put this in a thoughtful way, different way. So this feels like this benefits the city, right? But I feel like right now there's not understanding on how what benefits the city benefits residents. And so there's this disconnect from what we're doing here and the benefit for residents because they're paying, and there's so many issues with HOAs, and then HOAs are tacking fees on top of something that they've already paid, people have already paid, and there just isn't a lot of, like, there's just some confusion, murky water out there. So how this improves the overall, like, by us approving this city council, it gets us so much less time in the review process? Does it get the sidewalks built faster? Like, how do you put this, like, how do you talk to your hairdresser about this without talking about an integrated contract overview? I'm sorry. Like, I don't know how to put it in a simpler way, but I just, like, like, if I said this to somebody, they'd be like, yeah, Sandoval, that makes sense for me.
Definitely.
How do I, the person who's paying the fee, How do I make sure that it's benefiting the residents?
And how does Cashman's hairdresser feel?
I didn't know how to explain it in a different way.
It's a conundrum.
Team of hairdressers.
Like, how do you say this? Like, have you all been presenting at R&O meetings? Like, how do you help us who are asking for these huge numbers in a time where there's these layoffs and all these things? How does it benefit the residents of Denver?
The answer to that comes to what I think is the most important thing. Program setup is important. Sidewalk implementation plan, those are important things. I don't want to discount all of that. The most important thing that we are going to do is build sidewalks, right? Because we are collecting fees and we have to be delivering that. So the spot repair that's going on right now, that is actively, visibly work that we can say, look at what your fee is going to do, because we're actively able to fix things. These two construction contracts give us the capacity to deliver that work faster. I could run numbers, and I certainly won't be able to do it in my head right now on the spot, but ultimately, when we think about any contracting at the city, it takes 6 to 9 months to get a contract through. So when we do it this way, we are going through this work now, and these are large sums, and I absolutely understand that. But we are going through that to say, we are going to get these two base contracts set up. And then the staff from those two contracts will then be doing a lot of the day-to-day of procuring that work. They're going to put out and say, we need sidewalks built from here to here and from here to here. They're going to solicit bids. They're going to do all that work that normally would be city time to do. And it's going to make it faster. So directly to your constituents and the questions that they ask, these two contracts help us to deliver faster, and in doing so, we reduce the cost for construction because it inflates every year and everything gets more expensive. So the sooner we can construct, the cheaper it is. And it means that we have more consistency across that because it's led by only two firms, making sure that everything is consistent as it's being delivered. And there's one more thing.
I think like the iterative process of working with HNTB and the constructability reviews and all of those upfront reviews so that by the time it gets to construction, we aren't redoing or rehashing any previous decisions that have been made when it comes to design and cost.
Okay, that'd be really helpful if you could digest that and put that in a clip as we're working forward with this, because there's just, I think one of the things I get is the HOA concern, which Geneva, I know that I keep pressing you about, and how by us approving these contracts gets us these faster outcomes, which is beneficial for the residents of Denver. And I think it just needs to be clearly, like, what is an enterprise fund? Like, maybe a definition people don't understand.
Yeah, definitely.
How that works, because it's being collected separately and being utilized, so it's not coming from the general fund, which is having deficits this year.
Right.
So clearly delineating the buckets of money would be very helpful.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Council President. Councilmember Torres, and then Council President Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just want to thank you both. Geneva, the description that you just gave, I think, hits to the heart of why these contracts are necessary now, because we also don't want to face the questions from residents who are going, why are we still waiting for sidewalk work to get done? So, and I'm paying a bill, right? So we've got to actually make good on that commitment, and we know that we have projects that are ready to go. I do appreciate need that we're going to have as block by block these projects come up, because I'm already facing conversations about mature trees getting removed. Mm-hmm. And what's the cost and benefit of what we're being asked to put in. And the conversation around, is it appropriate to put like a curbside sidewalk in versus taking more property for a curb lawn? Where is that appropriate and why? And trying not to get diverted in a conversation about, well, we're a neighborhood that nobody cares about, so we're going to get the terrible sidewalks again, right? That we're actually thinking about where is it necessary to kind of put that safety measure in, and where are we trying to preserve trees along a corridor that doesn't have a lot. So all of those, I think you can't just make a rule for the city and have it work out. And so what I would ask is that, I think we would all feel better as council members having some really informed conversation. Like, I meet with the paving team every year, mm-hmm. And I get information about which streets are coming up for me, which are going to be this treatment versus that treatment. I think this conversation annually would be really helpful for us to know, and to be able to refer community to, hey, this corridor is going to be worked on in 2026. That would be a great kind of connection point for me so that we can constantly be in collaboration on that. So
yes, I'm hearing that you want to see me all again.
I want to see Geneva every year.
Great.
Thank
you're
you.
Gonna get so sick of me.
Never.
Sidewalks forever.
Never.
Great. Thank you, Council.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Torres. Council President Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a great idea. I love that. I just wanted to go back. Are we on track, or do you know if we're on track for the collection of the dollars that we anticipate for this year?
We are on track.
And it's roughly 40?
It is. Let me pull it up. It's 28 for this.
Well, that's with the contingency.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Oh my gosh, this thing, it keeps clicking it and it goes too far.
It's driving me
a little crazy, excuse me. It is, we are on track to collect $32.1 million. 10% of that goes unbudgeted as contingency, and therefore we are on track for our budget of 2025 of $28.9 million.
Do you anticipate that the current fees will increase over time, or can you talk about that?
Yeah.
I get a lot of feedback, and thank you for answering a lot of the questions and sending over additional information, but I have a lot of folks who are paying well over the $150.
Yes.
Standard fee.
Yes. So in the ordinance, when it was passed and then amended, it provides us the opportunity to increase our annual fee to keep up with inflation. So in the rules and regs that we're working on right now, which will be our public hearing targeting late August, which we've covered with many of you, that those rules and regs outline how those annual increases will happen. So in essence, it will be a combination of the consumer price index and the construction cost index. For 2026, that's at 2.9%. So the annual fee will increase from $150 to $154.40. And the impact fee for every foot of frontage above 230 feet, I know, this is complicated, is going from $350 to $360 a foot. And I can send this out after Ludi just to make that all really clear. So that's what it will go up. In these models, I forecasted 2026 based on that 2.9, and 2027, and I assumed a 3% annual increase. I don't know what CCI and CPI will be in that time.
Thank you. And then I like the idea of being able to come back to the committee with the update. I think that I know that we will have lessons learned, and I would be open and would hope that Dottie and the rest of committee would be open to hearing, you know, kind of some of our unanticipated consequences of how our fees are structured, how this rolls out, and what that impact is. I feel like there's room of like this was our best kind of guess, and this was our best plan forward, but being able to think about how we do that iterative process for consistent improvement. Because if we know that the fees are going to continue to escalate or to continue to go up, are we, you know, completing those projects that we have in the pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely.
And is there a benefit for, and do people see it within their neighborhoods? So
I sure hope so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council President Pro Tem. Two questions. Actually, one comment, then a question, and then we'll ask for a motion and second for the vote, the block vote. First thing is, I think you all have down pat clearly the data, the utility of the Y for the sidewalk fee and process and all of the good work that Dottie is doing. I think where the opportunity lies is where the human contact, a human impact piece is. For example, my mother, amazing West Indian woman, and Tim, you can pull down the slide. I'm not going to go into more numbers. We had enough numbers. Independent, went on walks on a regular daily basis, fell twice in 5 points, and now she is reluctant to walk within 5 points. 5 points it's old neighborhood. My house is an 1886 Victorian. There are all those houses with flagstone, uneven sidewalks. It has impacted her ability to socialize with neighbors, and it's impacted her ability just to simply walk and enjoy without support for myself or my husband. I think elevating that part of why sidewalks are beyond utility and it's about human need, I think is helpful. And I think a narrative within a quantitative presentation of facts is always helpful, especially with something as basic as sidewalks and how it impacts all of our lives, all of our family lives, whether it's accessibility and whether it's simply our elders, my mom, being able to do her 1 mile walk without fear of tripping. That's why I was so strongly in support of this when it came to the ballot for her. It will make it easier for her to walk. All the other data and stuff, we'll do our stuff during city council and make sure the numbers match because it's taxpayer dollars. It's important to tell those stories, and I think that is great. So talking about old sidewalks in 5 points, you were very nice, and Nick, to do some community walks with me in District 9, specifically in some of the historic neighborhoods, looking at Flagstone. I don't want to open a whole can of worms and for us to talk all about Flagstone. It's very complex. More information will follow if this goes to the floor and we have more discussion. Can you describe really this process and the impacts to Flagstones? I know that we're discussing a contract, but if you want to describe kind of within your strategic process, how are we dealing with Flagstones?
Yes, Flagstones, of course, Councilman Watson.
Obviously.
Yes. So the Flagstone challenge will be one, and conversation will be one that we continue to have special conversations with the community about through the sidewalk implementation plan. Based on our conversations and our meeting with Curtis Park neighbors, I know that that has to be, we need a separate and unique approach to dealing with our sidewalks because they are so important and also such a challenge. Within this contract, we don't specifically say concrete sidewalks, we just say sidewalks. And so if we come to an agreement and a way to move forward that makes a lot of sense for the program regarding Flagstone, then that would be something that we could potentially use these contracts to deliver. Makes sense.
That's helpful. I don't know, Councilman Hines, if that was a wave or that's you want to be back in.
May I?
Yes, you may, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Committee Chair. And I was going to not talk about Flagstone, but we did talk about Flagstone in our briefing, and we also in that task force talked about Flagstone a fair amount. And so I hope you don't mind that I'm just kind of chatting a little bit about our conversation with Flagstone. When Flagstone was first presented to the city, I think there was a bit more interest from the city's perspective to preserve the Flagstone citywide. As we did more research, the quarry that I think there were two quarries that were mined for the Flagstone that exists on our sidewalk today, those don't exist anymore. And so it's far more difficult to source the material for Flagstone. It's also far more dangerous to repair or replace. Can't really repair. You have to replace it if it's more than just a couple cracks. The challenge with replacing it is concrete, when you pour it, it's liquid and then it solidifies. Flagstone starts as a solid. So you get an 800-pound slab of Flagstone. And so it's far more error prone and injury prone. And so that's another reason why the city wanted to move a bit away from the city's involvement with Flagstone. And so I think one of the conversations that we'd had in the task force is that if an adjacent property owner wanted Flagstone, they could do that if they wanted, but that the city wasn't going to sponsor flagstone replacement. The third thing is also about accessibility. So part of the reason why I brought it up today in response to your question is that flagstone is, by nature, it's very rough. It's rigid. It creates some bumps along the way, and that creates a difficult experience for people who use wheelchairs, people who use canes, visually impaired, because then there are a whole much more variations just inherent with the design of flagstone. It makes it more difficult for people with disabilities to navigate. It creates more injuries for the disability community. And so at some point farther down the road with the previous stakeholder process, flagstone was less moved forward by the city process because of those few reasons. So I hope I didn't want to make the conversation about all the different things about sidewalks, but since you asked, I want to bring it up.
Appreciate that, Councilmember Hines. We've been having some rich discussions on flagstones. I think we can quote the committee's work on that. We are we'll be engaging fully within the neighborhoods that have flagstones with the team to ensure that all of the things you and Councilmember Hines did and that targeted subcommittee did, that those are informed, and any process and discussions we have in some of these historic neighborhoods with lots of flagstone, we're going to make sure that everyone is able to feel that the taxes they're paying for is providing for the city that they love. So with that, this is a vote, a block vote opportunity for an integrated contract. It's a block vote of 250992 and 250993. I need a motion and a second for that to be moved as a block.
Second.
Moved by Cashman, second by Torres. Sorry, Hines. Can we take that as by acclamation? Any other questions? It appears that that has passed. We will be bringing this to the floor. Before everyone escapes, I just wanted to say this is the last meeting of the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee. I want to thank my Vice Chair Cashman, Councilmember Cashman, for your leadership and support. I want to thank Alyssa, Tim, and Luke for always ensuring that we are on point for these meetings. This doesn't happen out of the air. Some of you know I'm a little quirky. My favorite TV show of all time is WKRP in Cincinnati, and I was going to leave with a quote. It won't be, "As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly." That's not the one. That's my favorite episode of WKRP in Cincinnati, but Les Nessman signs off every night with a certain statement, and I wanted to sign off this last Ludi meeting with the great words from Les Nessman, and he would say, "This is Les Nessman saying good day, and may the good news be yours."
Thanks,
adjourn.